Hello and welcome back to the Poyer's Travel Health Podcast. Thanks for tuning in with us this week. Today, Jay and I will be giving an overview of what to expect in terms of travel health for a trip to Southern Africa.
Yeah, I think we thought it would be kind of interesting to take a look at a trip to kind of the region and what you should think about in relation to travel health. But I do want to kind of chat about Southern Africa itself first. So what countries actually make up the region, and kind of like how many languages are spoken in this area? What can you kind of tell us about Southern Africa from that perspective?
Well, Jayden, there's a whole bunch of countries down in that part of the world. You know, I think, you know, I could fire off the list here. I'll mention a bunch of them, but I think from a traveling standpoint, by far the most likely ones that we run into are South Africa, you know, Zambia, Namibia, Botswana, you know, Zimbabwe. And then there are other countries where you will see some travel as well, you know, places like, you know, Lesotho, Mozambique, you know, even Eswatini, which is what Swaziland's now called.
Right.
But, you know, I think realistically speaking, probably by far the most likely places we see people going to on trips is usually South Africa, Zambia, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Botswana.
Right.
And as far as languages, there's lots of different languages. Certainly English is spoken in a lot of these places. But in other places, for example, like Mozambique, they still speak Portuguese. And in Namibia, they speak German. And that's all based on, you know, colonial past, that sort of thing. And as far as, you know, religious groups, there's lots of different combinations between Christianity and traditional beliefs. And yeah. There's a wide range of faiths there.
Definitely. Yeah. It's funny how the language tends to be quite sticky. I always find it interesting when there's these type of places and you find that a lot of people's native language is French or something kind of random like that, but it's all due to their development as former colonies. So I know you're interested in doing this trip to Southern Africa yourself. What countries would you personally kind of want to visit, and what types of things would you want to be doing when you're there?
Oh, so I could totally map out an itinerary, and I've certainly seen this itinerary before. So it's not like I've invented it it's this unique thing, because certainly I've seen people go on similar trips like this. Probably start off in South Africa, probably like in Johannesburg, maybe go across to Kruger Park in the eastern part of South Africa, and then work your way up through Botswana, up to Victoria Falls, which is there at the Zambian-Zimbabwe border. And then probably after that, go across to Namibia. You could spend some time at some game parks there, look around, and then check out all of the dunes and the sand, the desert in Namibia, and then work your way back down again to Cape Town, South Africa, and look around in Cape Town, and then that'd be the trip. That's definitely the trip.
Nice. Well, hopefully you'll be able to get down there someday. I think that would be a really, like, you'd see quite a variety of different things. But kind of onto some of the actual travel health concerns that someone might have, I wanted to kind of chat about mosquito-borne illnesses that one might encounter. I think that's kind of one of the first things that I would think about in relation to this trip. So first off, malaria. Would you recommend anti-malarial drugs for everyone, or is it kind of more dependent on where you're going and where you'll be staying?
It's definitely dependent on where you're going. When you look at South Africa, for example, really, the only part of South Africa which is a significant malaria concern is that Kruger Park area way on the east side of the country. So if you're spending time in Johannesburg and Cape Town or along the southern coast, malaria is not really an issue. But if you are spending time in Kruger, which is, you know, a very popular tourist destination, that's the consideration. There are a couple areas in the most northern part of South Africa which have started to become malaria risk areas. Typically speaking, that is, we do sometimes see people going to those areas mostly for hunting purposes, but most of South Africa is not as much of a concern besides those places. But then you start getting into some of those other countries, like pretty much everything north of South Africa is a malaria risk area. When you start talking about, you know, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Zambia, you know, Angola, Namibia. Actually, well, not all of Namibia, mostly the northern half of it, because the parts that are deserty, like how I was referring to the desert areas in Namibia, those aren't concerns, but the northern part of it, malaria is a concern. So yeah, you'd have to look at that, but it's definitely on a trip like that, you would probably need to be taking antimalarials for at least part of the trip.
Right. The other kind of major concern would be probably yellow fever. There are countries in the region that are considered risk countries and other that require you to be vaccinated if you're traveling from one of the other areas that are considered to be risk areas. Is it best to get it if possible, or are there some situations where you would probably be fine without it?
So I know in previous podcasts, we talked about yellow fever, and I think you always have to look at yellow fever from two separate points of view. One about the risk of yellow fever and actually getting the disease, getting the vaccine as a preventative measure, and then also getting the vaccine to actually make sure you can get into a country. So when we start talking about this part of the world, the main country where there's a real yellow fever risk is Angola. So sometimes people do go to Angola. It's not a real hot tourist destination for a lot of Canadians. Sometimes people go back there to visit family, and there is sometimes like mining and oil stuff going on there too. Certainly Angola had a yellow fever outbreak not even that many years ago, 3-4 years ago. So it's a real risk. But in most of the rest of these places, South Africa, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Botswana, the risk is really low to negligible. It's negligible. Even in Zambia, there's maybe a slight risk, but you know, there hasn't been a case of yellow fever in Zambia for years. So really, when you're looking at risk factor for illness, Angola is your main one. But then you've got the problem about getting into countries. Now, South Africa is very sticky about this sort of thing. If you're coming from a country that has yellow fever into South Africa, you have to have proof. So for example, I think maybe I've mentioned this again in a previous podcast, not that I expect everyone to have heard all of them, but if you're flying, say, from Canada through, you know, Germany or someplace through Europe, and then flying down directly to South Africa, you don't need to have a yellow fever certification. But if you were, say, flying from Canada to Europe, and then you stopped in Kenya, or you stopped in Ethiopia along the way, and then went down to South Africa, even if you were only in those locations, like in Ethiopia or Kenya for a very brief period of time, maybe even just in the airport, when you got to South Africa, you'd have to have proof of yellow fever vaccination. So that's kind of the consideration you have to have. And one of the things which, you know, is a relatively recent change, say within the last 3 or 4 years, if you were going to Zambia, South Africa would consider that a yellow fever risk country. So one of the sort of strange questions we would always ask people, this itinerary that I mentioned is, like I said, I've seen this itinerary before, but if you're going to Victoria Falls, which is basically on the Zimbabwe-Zambia border, you can walk across to Zambia if you want. But here's the deal. Zimbabwe is not a yellow fever risk country, but at the time, Zambia was considered a yellow fever risk country by South Africa. So if you decided to walk across the bridge and go to the Zambia side, and you would get your passport stamped with a Zambian stamp on it, when you would make your way back to South Africa, they would want proof of yellow fever vaccine, even though your chances of getting yellow fever in Zambia for like the afternoon was like basically zero, because like I said, there hasn't been a case of yellow fever in Zambia for years. So that was one of those weird questions we had to go over. But now South Africa, I don't know, maybe like I said, 4 years ago, they changed the rules. Now they don't consider Zambia a risk country anymore. So feel free to walk across the bridge and you'll be fine when you come back.
Right. So what kind of other diseases could be potentially cause for concern aside from the main ones being malaria and yellow fever?
I think, you know, hepatitis A and typhoid are pretty standard. I'd want both of those taken care of. Those are both vaccine preventable illnesses that I would want to protection against. There's always a traveler's diarrhea risk. You know, it's variable. You know, I'd say South Africa is probably one of the most variable countries in the world when it comes to traveler's diarrhea. There are some areas, poor areas, off the beaten path areas, where the traveler's diarrhea risk is incredibly high. But meanwhile, if you're eating in a restaurant in Cape Town, South Africa, a nice restaurant there, you know, your risk is probably not significant. So it would be variable. And throughout the other parts of the other countries besides South Africa, I'd say your traveler's diarrhea risk is definitely higher. Other things, you know, there is some risk of, you know, dengue, which we can't really do anything about except bug spray at this point in time. And rabies is always a consideration. I guess, you know, there is a rabid dog risk in some of these areas. I would probably still base that one more on the types of activities I'm doing, but it would be something that you would at least want to possibly consider.
Right, definitely. What about other types of risks that you might encounter in any of these countries, namely ones kind of aside from travel health, but are still related to kind of your safety and security?
I think security is definitely a concern in some of these countries. Even in places like in South Africa, there's a real concern regarding, you know, carjacking, that sort of thing. You know, I can remember, this is just an anecdote, a friend of mine who might even be listening to this podcast, actually. He told me he was in Johannesburg, this is a bunch of years ago, and they were eating out at a restaurant in like a really nice area in Johannesburg. And once they were done the meal, they were like, oh, we'll get your car for you. You know, it's valet service. And they're like, well, our car is right there. I can see our car from the outside of the hotel. They're like, no, we're not letting you walk to that car. We'll bring your car right to the door. That's too dangerous, you walking less than 100 meters to your car. Like the restaurant staff viewed that as an unnecessary risk. So I don't know, that's just, you know, and like, we're talking again, not in a dodgy area and everything like that, but that's the kind of concern I think there is to a degree. So, and you know, I think in other places in the region, there's certainly risk as well. You know, it's hard to blend in, but you can try it. But yeah, I think it's definitely something you have to think about. And also you want to stay away from any kind of political activity, because I think very often something going on in that regard in some of these countries, some of them are politically unstable. So you want to stay away from any of that stuff.
Definitely, yeah. Any sort of kind of public demonstration has been, from my research, emphasized that you really need to kind of see it, observe it, and turn the other way and get away from it quite quickly.
Yeah, it's just something you don't want to get involved in. And as a tourist, I think you just want to kind of, yeah, you want to stay away from that if at all possible.
Definitely. The treatment of protesters in a lot of these type of kind of semi-authoritarian regimes is definitely not the same as what it would be even in Canada or the United States. So you kind of have to be pretty careful about that sort of thing. But yeah, anything else you kind of want to mention or chat about, or anything that we missed?
Not really. I think the one thing that I was like bringing up, because I actually saw a case of this, there is an unusual illness, which you'll probably never get, but it's worth chatting about, you know, African sleeping sickness. So,
oh yeah.
Did you read about this in your advanced research, Jaden?
I saw it mentioned, but I didn't look too specifically into it.
It's really weird. So African sleeping sickness is carried by tsetse flies. Now, I have no practical experience with tsetse flies, but I have talked to many people who have dealt with them, and they are the most miserable insect on the planet. And DEET and Icaridin, all the usual bug sprays, don't work. And they are just miserable, miserable insects. They will eat you alive. But here's the thing. Not all tsetse flies carry African sleeping sickness, but some of them can. So they're very localized in certain areas, usually even to the point where the locals will actually know the higher risk areas, and they'll be like, you need to stay away from there because you don't want to get bit by one of those flies over there. But with African sleeping sickness is, if you do get bitten, it gives you this huge black, like circular type, it looks like a wound basically. And yeah, basically you get real sick. You can definitely die from this. And there have been cases in the Calgary area where people have had this. Not patients of mine per se, but certainly I'm aware of cases that have occurred here. And I remember one time I was very peripherally involved in one case, and they had to fly in the medicine from Ottawa because it was the only place they had it. It was in some kind of federal repository where they only would fly it out if it was absolutely needed. They flew it out to Calgary to give to this person.
So is it like a medication for kind of like symptomatic care, or is it like a cure, quote unquote?
Yeah, like it's not symptomatic care. It's actually it actually treats the infection.
I see.
And I honestly can't remember too much of the details of it anymore, but I do remember the situation happening because it was kind of a big deal because they had to fly the stuff in from Ottawa. So,
right. And how common is it, say, like within a local population somewhere where this might actually be a risk?
It's not real common. It's not something that happens all the time, but certainly it happens. And like my understanding of it is it's usually very localized. So avoiding the area is the best thing that you can do. And right. Even the locals, like they just, what I've been told is, and I've talked to people who have been on safaris and stuff like that, where the guides will say, don't go over there. Like, don't go over there. You want to stay away from that area. And the reason is because there's a risk in that going off in that direction. You don't want to go there. And it's got nothing to do with like lion is going to jump out at you. It's about the flies.
Right. Right. And what do the flies sort of look like? Are they, I would assume they're different from your kind of run of the mill house fly type of thing.
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. I really don't actually know. I know they're very miserable and persistent, but I actually don't know what they really look like.
Right. Because when we've discussed mosquitoes before, we've noted that there's kind of a discernible physical difference between the different, like, they're obviously not different species, but different like varieties of mosquitoes that carry different diseases.
Yeah. Like, no, you're right. Because certainly when you start looking at some of the mosquitoes that carry dengue, you know, they've got that striped pattern on them. It looks like almost like a tiger type thing. And how a tsetse fly is different, actually, I'm really actually not sure. That's a good question. Might have to like check into that.
Definitely. Well,
how come you didn't research that, Jaden?
I guess that should have been part of the advanced research. I guess there weren't any real specific statistics like I usually like to share. Yeah. In a podcast, but oh well, save it for next time.
Sure.
But okay, anything else you want to mention?
No, I don't think so. I think that covers the general idea behind it. And I think it's definitely a cool trip. And like I said, it's definitely pretty high on my bucket list. So hopefully at some point I can make that little trip.
Oh, I hope so too. Thanks for tuning into this week's edition of the Polaris Travel Health Podcast. A reminder that the information and advice that we provide in this podcast are not a substitute for live medical advice tailored to your itinerary and your medical history. If you have questions, or maybe you're going to Southern Africa, or want to book an appointment, please head over to our website, www.polaristravelclinic.ca. Check us out on Twitter, @PolarisTravelRx, and our Facebook page as well. We hope you'll tune in again with us next week.
Thanks, Jaden.
Thank you.